Hello there, as Obi-Wan would say. This is Steve Lascauzo, and this is not the start of a solo episode, but I did want to have a clarification up top. I made some errors in the show notes, maybe a little bit out of boredom with this week's episode. Maybe it was because I was trying to do it while also taking care of my kids this afternoon, but I made several errors in the show notes, and one of them was to leave in that Jon Favreau directed this week's episode. He did not. And if I had just paid a little bit of attention to the end credits, I would have noticed that it did say Peyton Reed. And if you know who that is, you'll know that he happened to direct two Ant-Man movies, Ant-Man and Ant-Man and the Wasp. And when you hear Tim a little later in the episode make a mention about how one of the creatures looks a little bit like something out of Ant-Man, well, that would have been the perfect time to make a comment about how that was probably a direct nod to the director, Peyton Reed. But I digress. There's a lot to talk about this week in this week's episode recap, and let's get back to it.
This is the way.
This is the way. This is the way.
This is the way. I'm Steve Lascauzo. That's Tim Harris.
That's I made the show.
Why did it have to be spiders? All right, guys.
That makes me want to listen.
Season 2, Episode 2, Chapter 10. If there's one thing I don't like, it's spiders. That's like my thing. Lord of the Rings, Shelob, and all that. Like Harry Potter stuff with the spider. Like, the one thing I don't like is spiders. And that's, we got a lot of spiders this week, or whatever.
Why does it seem so drab already?
Wow. I don't know. Let's just get right into it. What did you guys think of this episode? Do I want to read the texts, or should we just let you go ahead and give your thoughts?
Tim? Was my least favorite episode.
Yeah, that was Andy. Tim?
Oh, I just said my thoughts in my head. There was nothing.
There was nothing? It was terrible?
No, I didn't care for it at all. Even my wife, who's not a Star Wars fan, but we'll watch it with our 7-year-old, and we all watched it tonight. And she's like, that seemed terrible. Now, I don't think terrible. I think it had its moments.
There's some cool parts in it.
We talk about last season how there's a filler episode, or there's some episodes that kind of get you to the next episode. And this just seemed like,
I could never watch it again for the rest of my life and be totally fine.
I will say, like, I didn't hate it, but I definitely did not love it. It was,
like you said,
I think it was probably my least favorite episode. I love a lot of the other episodes, but if we were ranking them, I think at least right now, if this doesn't tie in somehow, some way, I would say, yeah, it's probably my least favorite episode.
I don't care if it does tie in. Yeah. I think it's forgettable.
I said last week I thought that was my favorite episode. To turn around to say,
like, if we hadn't had to do the podcast, I would have just stopped watching it.
Wow. Wow. Well, let's backtrack a little bit and try to salvage this, because I think this is going to be a pretty short podcast today. If you're listening and you disagree with us, please engage with us. Let us know why. If you thought this was a great episode, maybe you're a huge Alien fan or Prometheus or whatever. I mean, maybe you're just a huge fan of the horror genre, and you thought that this was a great episode.
Was this supposed to be horror and scary?
I think it was like a horror episode. I saw a lot of article titles that were like saying Star Wars goes horror and stuff like that, and I could see how it was like a sci-fi
horror. I didn't think this was horror at all.
It was a spider with a garbage disposal on his mouth.
Well, you know, I did think of the mouth when it opened up the, well, I don't even know what we're going to call it, the mom, the giant one, the mom and the dad spiders, but when I thought it was like the Sarlacc pit.
Oh, okay.
I thought the mouth opened to another mouth and there was layers of teeth. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, maybe that's what the Sarlacc pit was, but it wasn't a nice one. It was a desert.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not really sure. There's even some confusion about what creature that was in the caves, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But if, like I said, if you have some comments to us, please send it our way.
Last week it was a giant worm. This week it's a giant spider. If this was basically just a second level on a video game. This was the spider was the big boss in this episode. The crate dragon was the big boss in the last episode, and it doesn't bode well for season two for me.
I know, yeah. But we did get a new language.
All right, so send us your comments at thisisthewaypodcast@gmail.com. Last week, I had a little thing about Mando Mondays, and it looks like now that this is not a weekly YouTube thing, that this is just going to be their YouTube presence was just to kick things off. It was a launch. And now if you go to StarWars.com/Mando-Mondays, and then you go down to the All Products section, you click on Apparel and Accessories, and then you click See More a few times, you can finally see the Cufflinks.com merchandise that Tim was mentioning last week that is on the website. They do have Cufflinks.com merchandise right down there. And why do I mention Cufflinks.com? It's because
they're our best friends.
They're our best friends right now. They sent us a whole bunch of merchandise to take a look at. And throughout this season, we will be letting you know about it because they gave us a code as well. TheWay15 at checkout, and we'll get you 15% off
all some pretty cool merchandise. Yeah.
So if you want to take a look, we're gonna do a couple of product reviews, we hope, in future episodes, and so that you can hear a little bit more about it. But I know they've got some cool sales coming up. It's gonna be Black Friday in a couple of weeks, so definitely take a look at their website, pick out a few things, and make sure that you come back to them as we review their products and tell you about any cool sales that they have. But the way 15 is the code for cufflinks.com.
Yeah. Good.
November 6th, 2020, season 2, episode 2, chapter 10, The Passenger. Written and directed by Jon Favreau. Score by Ludwig Göransson.
Yeah, it's 35 minutes and 15 seconds from the start of the episode to when the end credits kicks in. It lists it at 42 minutes. I don't know. Today I just felt like I wanted to check because it felt like an eternity watching
the reason the it episode. Was listed longer is because the actual runtime is that, but includes the recap.
Mm-hmm,
and so the does. Recap at the beginning.
And it also includes not just the regular credits. I think it includes like the Danish credits and the, you know, whatever.
All Disney Plus shows do that.
They do that, yeah. Mm-hmm, and it's kind of misleading because...
Well, and it's a pain when you're watching with your toddler and they just want to go to the next episode of Muppet Babies and there's like 14 different languages and she's like, Daddy, can I watch another one? And I'm like, yeah, it's going to play. And she's like, no, it's not. It's just a black screen with words on it, Daddy.
And that sounds like a little thing, but when you're a parent and you're trying to watch a lot of, or you're trying to let your kids watch episodes... That's a big thing. So Disney Plus.
Come on, Disney Plus. I pay you to parent my kid.
Yeah, pretty much.
Just kidding.
Mean, you want it to be a little bit, I don't know, make them actually have to go and look. If you want to look at the extra credits, look at the extra credits. But that I think, definitely needs to be fixed. All right.
No surprise, Pedro Pascal reprises his role as the bounty hunter himself.
That's right. Din Djarin. And then we have Paul Sun-Hyung Lee. He's a Korean-Canadian actor. Best known for Kim's Convenience.
I love Kim's Convenience. It's such a great show.
It's one of the funniest shows ever.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Binge watch all those. Have you seen those, Steve?
I have not.
It is such a fantastic show. You need to watch them all.
I liked his take on the captain.
They are hilarious.
Dave Filoni back as Trapper Wolf. Amy Sedaris back as Pelimato.
So that was Kim as the
He was X-Wing captain, pilot. Yeah.
I did not realize that was him.
That was him,
yeah. That's pretty cool.
And then Bradley Baker as the Frog Lady voice. Now, that is kind of weird to mention just the Frog Lady voice, and it was credited as Frog Lady.
Now, here's a question. That was the Frog Lady the same race of people that were on the
Act
planet?
Act 2? Mm-hmm. No, and I checked. She looked like one of those nuns. Yes, I checked that exact thing. They were different in the face, and they had the Frog Lady had some weird temple... like pulsing gland. Temple mm-hmm. thing.
Glandular problem?
I thought that exact thing the first time I watched it, and I may have even mentioned it in the watch-along commentary.
Wait a minute. You watched this twice?
I did watch it twice.
Ooh.
Yeah. Now, folks, please, don't stop listening. We are going to talk about the episode.
And how much we hate
but
it.
But the reason I mentioned Dee Bradley Baker is because he does, like, most, if not all, of the Clone Troopers in the Clone Wars. And he worked on Rebels and Resistance. So the guy is a very eminent voice actor.
He's a famous voice actor. Yeah. He's done lots of cartoons and all sorts of things. Anything that has a non-traditional voice, such as a grunt or some sort of growl, he does them all. I mean, he's fantastically talented.
Yeah.
And like he worked on Animaniacs. He's worked on Tiny Toons. He's worked on many, many shows.
Yeah, he's on American Dad. I saw he did the Klaus, the fish. So he's done other things other than Star Wars and Disney. He's done a lot of stuff, and the guy is very famous in the voice acting community. So I thought that was worth mentioning. Let's just get to it. We open up on Tatooine and the Mandalorians on the speeder. We see a trap being set, and it works.
I like how fast he's going. They actually made a difference, but I think between the last one with the marshal, where it didn't seem like they were going that fast. They were talking amongst each other.
Yeah.
This time, they actually did seem like they were going quite fast.
I thought, and maybe I'm wrong, at the end of the last episode, I thought he was going back at like sunset, and it seemed like it was midday, or not as late as it was. Are we supposed to think that Mos Pelgo is that far away? I guess
it was that far away because on the first episode he stayed overnight.
Had and he was with the Tusken Raiders, remember?
Yeah.
Right,
so
right.
It was a big distance.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah. Maybe it was part of that explains that pretty much. All right, so the trap works. He goes flying. His jetpack lands safely, but the child is like rolling around at that speed, and somehow it's unhurt. I guess.
But he was wrapped in blankets and stuff.
Yeah,
I guess. And maybe the force helped him a little bit.
He's kind of rubbery.
I guess.
How many bones
so.
Does he have? Babies bounce. Have you Probably. Ever bounced a baby down the stairs?
A bouncing baby.
I have never done that, by the way. I'm just saying.
Yeah,
there's a reason they don't.
With my wife watching as a mom, she was.
Well,
the thing
yeah,
is,
yeah, she's a little scared for the child.
Babies don't develop kneecaps until they're like 2 or 3 years old,
right? And their skull hasn't fused together completely, so there's redundancies in place there.
Yeah,
so maybe there's a little brain damage, but who knows? It definitely made him hungry, and we'll talk about that later. So Jaren fights the trappers, a creature. I don't know what I probably should have looked it up, but I'll be honest with you. Just like we were talking about the rest of the episode. This was one of those things of like I just didn't care enough to look back and see what kind of I've seen
like
it
bandits.
Before. Yeah, it just looked like a bandit holding a knife to the child.
The smaller one holding the
knife.
I thought it was a Jawa in a different outfit.
It could have been. It could be a Jawa without.
They definitely said they were definitely looking for the child.
Right, but I still think it was like a Jawa that had separated from its clan or whatever because when he started arguing or trying to negotiate, he started talking about like loot. There's a lot of loot here with the speeder and this stuff. And he was doing a trade.
They definitely were scavengers.
They were scavengers. Yeah.
I like that theory, though. Maybe it was a Jawa without the cloak, without the normal
Wait, rogue.
Cloak. Yeah.
Although he didn't speak Hattese. He was talking in English, John. But they did seem to always understand whoever they were talking to. So.
Yeah. I'm not really sure. Yeah. So he strikes a deal for the jetpack. And I kind of knew. I was like, so just turn the jetpack on, and that's basically what he does. After he accepts it, starts running off, the Mandalorian remotely ignites the jetpack and goes up in the sky. And at this point, I'm loving this episode. I'm like, yes, this is what I wanted, this is what I expected. The alien falls to the ground, and
we add humor to misery, and it was it was very comical
at this point. I just wondered why didn't he go and look for their vehicle, because surely if they're out here they had a vehicle, right? But he ends up trucking back home on his own 2 feet. He puts I guess his rifle on his back and
mounts the rest of his gear. Yeah,
and so he walks back into Mos Eisley, and it's at night. He enters a famous cantina, and in the hero booth Pelimato is playing sabacc with an ant like alien creature, and they just go for it. They just call him Dr. Mandible.
And that was my first downer moment for this episode. I didn't like that character. I thought it was just a giant ant.
And, yeah.
I don't know. Did they pull the costume from Ant-Man when the ants were larger and they were sitting in the house with Scott?
Oh, yeah.
And they were playing drums? That's what it felt like.
And I didn't like the way that she turned into a different person around other people. Like, I get that she could be Two-Faced, but we have had so much interaction with her. We probably have had as much interaction with her. She's spoken more lines than the Ugnaught did. And yet here we are to believe that all of a sudden she's going to sell Mando out. It felt very disingenuous. It took it out of her character for me. And that's when I said, oh, they're jumping the shark. Because they just jettisoned and retconned her whole personality and their relationship. And there was no loyalty to him at all.
I thought maybe she was going to give him back the money or something. I I agree with you. It felt like a little out of character, and then maybe that comes from comfort of being around him so much, but that's a hard sell for me.
I don't think she's that comfortable around him because she was commanding her droids even after she found out that he didn't like that he had changed his attitude on droids. She still was very cautious.
In the last
episode.
So she's playing Sabacc and with the creature, and the Mandalorian has to stake the Dr. Mandible for the information. Mata wins the hand with a hand that she slaps it down, and
she clearly knew she was going to win it.
Right. I mean, the worst poker face, worst Sabacc face on the planet. So I didn't catch it until the second time when I watched it with the captions on. She slams it down, says, "Idiot's Array," and continues talking to the Mandalorian and translating for the alien. Now, Idiot's Array is a hand that Lando Calrissian used to beat Zeb in an episode of Star Wars Rebels. And the episode is called Idiot's Array. So they have a nice little callback to Star Wars Rebels. It was an episode where Lando was basically kind of cheating them out of a way for him to run a scam and use their ship, use the ghost in Rebels. So I, at this point, I'm like, okay, you get a little nod. Mato indicates that the real information on more Mandalorians is going to be revealed by a source that will meet at the hangar. And she asks about the dragon meat and says she doesn't like maggots. I didn't quite get that. Like, I don't like maggots. Yeah, who is somebody going to like maggots? Like, I don't know why they...
Oh, I just figured that some of the alien creatures, that's a specialty. It's like
a alien food.
Well, I think it's just a common colloquial joke. Like we would say, "Hey, don't burn those steaks. I don't want to eat charcoal. I like it medium rare." I felt like that's what it was, just a seasoning kind of joke.
I mean, it kind of makes sense because the very next scene, they're at the hangar, and then there's a treadwell repair droid, and it's roasting the meat like they do at Batuu.
Mm-hmm. At this point, I'm still okay with the episode, other than the ant.
I thought it was a Ronto Roasters.
Yeah, it was. So she says, "Don't overcook it." She's not a Rodian. She said she likes it medium well or whatever.
Which Watto was a Rodian, right?
No, Watto was is a Toydarian. Rodians are the ones that Han Solo shot.
Greedo.
Greedo is a Rodian. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So the Treadwell droid face always reminds me of Johnny Five. Do you guys remember that movie?
Johnny Five. I
don't know if that's intentional or if it revert, like Johnny Five was based on that droid in some Star Wars universe that I don't remember. But anyway, Mato tells Mando the contact will lead him to a system that's close. It's only, she says, one system trailing. So I always kind of like when they do like, it's not exactly like it is in our world. Like they talk about, you know, travel between star systems in a different way. So she says one system trailing, and she says that there's a covert there. The good news is the information's free minus the finder's fee, with a catch. And she says a skank in the scud pie, which is just a weird thing. I would have liked it.
So for me, that was when I started losing faith in the episode. I thought it was funny, but to me, that's the same thing as saying, I guess every once in a while, two suns do shine on a bantha's tail. To me, now they are trying to make their little quotes. And so for me, that was the moment when they're trying to get their quotable lines in there. So this was our quotable line for this episode. This is something else to put on their coffee mug and a t-shirt. Because a skank and a scud, what was it? A skank and a scud pie? Yeah, it was just like, that's just something you want people to say to get into the pop culture as a meme. And it just, it felt like it was,
something to watch, right, Tim?
You think? Yeah, no. I totally agree with Andy that I think it was just forced in there. You don't relive and remember episodes of things by forcing in all these, you know, one-liners in there. The one-liners, they should come naturally. Like, this just didn't seem to fit.
I felt forced.
I'll say this, that line that you just mentioned, Tervis already turned it into a cup because I sent you a picture of it. I was like, oh my gosh, that line we liked is already on. Now, if we start seeing shirts and like marketed like skank and a scud pie on StarWars.com or something.
No, I would rather see the last week's episode on that line on a Tervis or a shirt.
But that's what I'm saying. Well, like, that might be what they're doing. You might have hit it right on the head.
Well, the word skank too is such a
derogatory.
Well, it's such a regular person's word. It's not a Star Wars word.
Right.
At least two sons on a Bantha's tail. Yeah, I mean, those are very, it's a very Star Wars saying. Skank and a skank, it's like two languages mashed up together. Mm-hmm. Like speaking English and Spanish and making it one language. It just felt like it was, I wasn't in either world. I didn't exist in either place.
Yeah.
It just felt meh.
I agree 100%. I think it's something that we need to just keep an eye on, because if they keep forcing, I think you're right. I think it's a force. I think they forced it in there, and no pun intended on force, but I think they are trying to force those lines in there.
And I watched an episode or an interview today of a show that I absolutely love, which is Cobra Kai. And it was Kevin Smith interviewing the whole cast, and I don't know the actor's name, but he plays Sensei Lawrence.
Okay.
Or
Billy Zabka?
No, I apologize. Not Lawrence, John Kreese.
Oh, okay.
So, and he made a great little quote about what we're talking about, this, that these lines that, I mean, they can't be forced in there. Like, what do you remember from the first Karate Kid? And you remember
sweep
things.
Sweep the leg.
Sweep the leg.
Wax on, wax off.
Wax on, wax off. And they didn't seem forced. This, I didn't like it. Yeah. It seemed forced.
Yeah. And we may totally forgive them and forget about this. Hopefully we forget about this episode a little bit. Oh, but I think we forgot about it a lot. Yeah, we need to kind of watch them, because I think just last week we all felt, we were like, yes, it's in good hands. Star Wars is in good hands. And this might be the chink in the armor, Ted. this might be a little bit of a signal that things aren't going to be going so well later on in the season. But we hope they will. All right, so anyways, we'll pick back up there. She says, you know, it's a skank in the scud pie. There's one little skank in the scud pie that he has to take the contact there. And he says, you know, do you vouch for this person? And she vouches for them on her life. I don't know what that means. Like, does that mean if things go wrong, he's going to go back and kill her?
It felt like she was swearing on her grandmother's grave. I mean, yeah, that's what, like, it felt like. Yeah. It's like she was saying, I cross my heart, hope to die. That's what it felt like to me.
I guess he just trusts her completely. So she says they're also, oh, and you can't use hyperdrive. So at that point, he says, deal's off. That sublight travel will be too dangerous. Model says that, starts to explain, now, no, it'll kill the unfertilized eggs of this passenger who's traveling to meet her husband before the equinox to keep their line from ending. So we're supposed to be having our heartstrings pulled here a little bit. So
all the while, we still have never seen this person.
Right.
And we have no relationship with her other than the fact that she is a friend of the crazy lady.
Right. And we're going to meet her in just a couple of seconds. And she says, it's just one sector over on the estuary moon of Trask in the gas giant system of Cole Iben. So it's one of those lines that, like, I think Mark Hamill said, like, you can write this stuff, but you can't say it. It's just a lot of gobbledygook science stuff, but it's cool, you know, and maybe Cole Iben has some other meaning. I couldn't find Trask or Cole Iben on Wikipedia at all. So I think their entries are just brand new today. So then, like Tim was saying, she starts talking, and this is where I was started to go out on the episode, was when Pelimato starts note. So she starts talking frog language to this frog lady.
And I thought that was great. I love
you
that.
You like that?
I did like that she did understand it, and I knew that Mando didn't understand it at that point.
To me, that's the whole point of the thing. I mean, that's Star Wars. Like, Chewbacca talks in a different voice.
Right, but I just didn't like the voice. Like, it was, I would have liked the voice to be just a little different. Oh, it just sounded like a little bit too, like, they even call her Frog Lady. And to me, that's, like we were just talking about, that's not Star Wars. Well, I mean, that's just a frog a person.
And she did just jump like a frog when she jumped and all that
stuff.
When
she ran, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you need a universal translator like in Star Trek?
I'm fine with him not knowing the language and being translated. I just didn't actually like the actual voice that they settled on. And I don't know what they could have done otherwise, but I remember, or we'll get to it in a minute, because he does try to make some contact with her in the ship, and we'll get there. So she says her husband has seen the Mandalorian, so that's why. So I think he's just saying, okay, we're going there. Mato says she's an excellent judge of character, and so far I guess she has been.
Well, this
at
is
least
when we find out though that she has never met her before,
right?
And yeah, that's what's so stupid is before she said, yeah, I know her, all this stuff. So she's lying to Mando to get him to do this thing. But what is in it for her? That's what doesn't make any sense.
The finder's fee, I guess.
Finder's fee.
But what is the finder's fee? The finder's fee
is 10% of what? Nothing.
Yeah. 500. I don't know.
500.
She already got 500 from the game. Yeah.
So I don't know. So then the next scene, we're in space, board the Razor Crest. The Mandalorian says it's dangerous to travel sublight. He can't speak to the frog lady, so he tries Hatties, and she has no idea. He sets the course for the system, recommends sleep, and here we see that the child has been eyeing the eggs for food.
And this has to be my favorite part of an episode that I just didn't care for, but absolutely loved this part with a child.
Which is a slight callback. If it's a frog lady.
If it's a frog, he's hungry.
He eats frogs. He eats frogs. He ate frogs in the first season. So I liked that part. I was a little grossed out, though, that he's like eating this woman's children. But it was the first time, to me, it was funny. The first time was funny. So Dinger scolds him. Then he racks out.
I thought it was funny every time.
You thought it was funny every single time?
Absolutely.
Yeah, by the end of the episode, it was like one of those, what was that thing? It was like the first time, it was funny. The second time, wasn't so funny. Third time, wasn't so funny. But the fourth time, it was funny again. Like, at the end, it was funny again. So the alarms go off, and two X-Wings are hailing a Razor Crest M111.
And this is why he didn't want to take the job, because he couldn't go to hyperspace.
Right. They said they noticed his transponder's not emitting. Jaren says, it's a pre-Empire surplus, and I'm not required. And they say that was before. We're under new Republic jurisdiction. All craft are required to run a beacon. He says, yeah, I'll get right on it. And then they just say, safe travels. And
no, they said, we'll wait for you.
No. First, he says, safe travels. And then, may the Force be with you. And they say, and also with you, which they never say in Star Wars. That's always like I've always thought.
That's always a Steve-ism.
That's like, yeah, and also with you. That's like growing up in church. It was like, may the Force be with you, and also with you, because it was like a church thing. They didn't say that in Star Wars. Now they say, and also with you. So to me, that was a big deal.
Didn't Princess Leia say it in the later movies?
I don't know, man. I think she was just like, may the Force be with you, and may the Force be with you. I could be wrong. Somebody go ahead and feel free. But I always heard, whenever I heard, and also with you, I always thought, oh, that's a church thing. So anyway, moving on. That's when they say, oh, and one more thing. The X-Wings, they say, oh, we want you to send it. Can you send us a ping? They're sweeping for Imperials, and Jaren says he'll let them know if he sees any. And they said, yeah, we're still going to need that ping. Jaren tries to stall him a little bit, saying, I can't really find it. And they tell him, oh, no, we'll wait. He pretends it's not working. They tell him, well, if you can't verify he is an Imperial, we're going to have to follow you. They're going to have to follow them to the outpost at Adelphi, and they will run his tabs there. And he says, oh, wait a second. Oh, yeah, there it is. It's transmitting now. That's when the frog lady wakes, makes some noise. Jaren says to be quiet, and the X-Wing pilot hears him. He says, oh, the hypervac's drawing off the exhaust manifold, which is just gobbledygook. And then, so I didn't catch it the first time. This is when on they finally, on the captioning, say who is speaking. And Trapper Wolf said, which is Dave Filoni, says, Carson, can you switch over to channel 2? And
yeah, right then I you heard go, him say that, yeah.
Yeah, well, I didn't know who was saying it the first time. I knew later, but if I had been watching the first time with the captioning, you would have known it was like Wolf. Oh, Trapper Wolf from the first season. So he says, you know they're going to talk about him when they switch over to channel 2. And Trapper Wolf was the lead X-Wing pilot in chapter 6. He fired on the station that the Mandalorian left the beacon on in the pocket of the prisoner that he was rescued. And then they ended up destroying the outpost there, killing his old partner.
Now, do you think that they heard him say, be quiet, and they thought suspicion because he said be quiet? Or do you think it's because they heard her and maybe she was the one that was being tracked?
I think it's more likely that they kind of sensed he was being dodgy, and that when he said be quiet, I think it was the first one rather than the latter for that. I don't think she was being tracked.
She would say it was the former, not the latter?
The former, not the latter, because from what Tim was saying, because I think it was this, just that he was being dodgy, and they're like, something's up here, and we want to check you out. And I don't know what the ping meant. Do you know? I have no idea. Was that like a scan of the creatures on board, or?
Oh, I thought it was just like sending an access code. Like, right. Hey, I'm sending you, this is my ship. This is my VIN number. Like they used to do. Oh, remember okay. They say send your code when the Imperial ships would come, and they would check, and they would say send us your code.
It's like
you would have to have the encryption key kind
of
thing.
Right. It's like the last three number or the three numbers on the back of your credit card.
Oh, okay.
You already have the credit card number, but you need the three.
Oh, okay.
They're just authenticating that. No. It's not stolen.
X-Wings, attack foils in position. This is when they know that the jig is up, and Carson asks if the ship was in the proximity of the New Republic Correctional Transport Bothan 5. I don't think we knew that information from last season. So that would be what the ship was in the prisoner episode. The Mando breaks for the cloudy blue planet below. It looks like the scene from the trailer, and I think it is. The X-Wings get their targeting computers online, and they say, come on, Razor Crest, don't make us do it. They say stuff like, can you believe that he's running in that thing? And like, oh, we got a runner. So they're, you know, I mean, they're basically policing the neighborhood. You know, they're like,
did you think he's going to get away for a second? Did you think he was going to dodge them through the clouds?
I kind of did. When he turned off his engines and dipped, I thought he was going to lose them. But I guess maybe they have better tracking. You know,
I thought in the clouds he was going to lose them. He would whip around a dense cloud and just not be seen and then just turn around.
I don't remember from the trailer, and maybe we could go back and look at it some other time, the scene of him going into the canyon, they follow him in there. I don't remember in the trailer if they were following him in there. So that might have been a clue to it. You know, we might have been thinking like, oh, he gets away because we don't see that. I don't remember subconsciously from the trailer. And now I could be wrong. Maybe they do follow him in the trailer. But yeah, I thought he was going to get away when he dipped into the canyon, and that's not what happens.
I don't think it's the Razor Crest as a nimble and
yeah, it's
like whipping around like a TIE fighter.
It's a cargo ship.
I mean,
yeah, they called it an antique later. So yeah,
I mean it was an antique last season. So
yeah. So he maneuvers through the canyon a little bit, tries losing the X-Wings, but he damages the ship when it falls through the ice into a cavern. He like skids to a stop, throws the thrusters on just at the last second to avoid really hitting the wall.
At this point, it feels like we're in a really forced 3D movie that has been turned into a Star Tours-like attraction, where it's all about the jarring and the shaking.
So do you think they could put this as a ride?
I didn't even think about that.
It just felt like, and it was all those 90s CG effects that you'd find in those roller coaster type rides. And it just didn't feel special. It didn't feel Star Wars-y.
Tim, that was a great call because I could totally see that as being like a planet now that we go to in Star Tours. And like, oh, you know, and fall through the... I mean, it really does.
The next
like
Mando ride that it comes out with?
It could be. I mean, and I don't put it past Star or Disney either to like have them say, this is what we need you to do. You know, we need you to come up with this series, this scene. I mean, they could...
To make easily, it usable and something that they could in their right. attraction.
But typically the attractions don't work that way. It's the production comes first and the attraction comes afterwards. Or true. They come simultaneous. But I wouldn't think that they would dictate that direction.
Yeah, I could see them asking for it maybe Favreau acquiescing to it. But maybe that's not the case. If it does show up, Tim, you get 20 extra internet points.
Woo-hoo!
for calling that if that ends up happening. All right, so this is really when the horror movie tropes are kicking in here. Because like they fall into the cave. Jaren awakens in the cockpit, and he tends to the frog lady. She's worried about her eggs, so he says he'll go find them. Everything about the rest of the episode is like, I mean, they walk carefully. The music changes. He says he's going to go find the eggs. He get her a blanket. Heads down. The child appears missing. There's a large hole in the hall, and the child's under a blanket. Eat more eggs. Like popped open the top of the thing.
I mean, it's like being in the movie theater and having like milk duds. Just can't pop a few.
Yeah, like, he's totally fine. Again, I guess
as big as his head.
They're pretty
sucking him down.
He's pretty large, and he says...
It's like a hard-boiled egg, and he's just like...
How many did you eat? And the sounds are, like, weird and funny. He's, like, burping and
it's like he's eating slurping. The memories from inside out. Like, it just...
Yeah. Like, billiard ball size. I mean, these are huge eggs, so... The main power drive isn't responding. The hull lost integrity. And
of course
when egg falls, temperature will too. So he suggests they sleep. So he just woke up from a head wound, but now he wants to go back to sleep. I'm not sure that's recommended by medical professionals. She spots the carcass. When they're going to sleep, she spots the carcass, the robot carcass of Zero from the prison episode. And she uses Zero's head to speak with the Mandalorian. She wakes him up.
I figured that he was going to make an appearance in this episode because in the pre-trailer or the review of last week,
which they actually so plugged in
last season.
Like, just let that be a surprise.
Exactly.
I don't watch the commercials for that very reason.
Right.
Don't
right.
give me... This is a streaming show that I've already bought into. I'm in episode 10. Don't remind me about something that happened five right. episodes ago.
We watched a recap of last season at the beginning before this season started, and that should be it, right?
Yeah. Right, yeah. I the coming, or, you know, last season ons and that sort of stuff.
There was a lot of times for the episode we're about to watch.
It does. I can't remember any other episode where it was this egregious, but it really did.
It was very disappointing. It took away the uniqueness and the cool callback. And so it just made it cheapened it.
So Din Djarin's worried because he says that droid's a killer. But she says she bypassed its security protocols and accessed its vocabulator. I'm not even sure if it was... I thought that it was Taika Waititi who did the voice, and I don't think that was his voice. No,
it
wasn't him.
It was the guy from the IT crowd.
Oh, you're right. It was. Yes, you're right.
It was the guy from the IT crowd because he made a big deal about the last season. And then also...
But I don't think it was him again. Do you? I think it was somebody else.
It was absolutely him again. Same voice.
But my issue there, though, is if it's a killer droid, if he's worried about it being a killer, why does he have its severed head on his ship? He's been keeping it for five episodes.
Right.
So if it's really that big of a deal, he would have gotten rid of it.
Right. And it's the first time we have really seen it. I mean, we have seen
his... The man that hates droids.
Wait a minute. You don't think of it as a trophy?
I mean, maybe, but...
I thought it was evidence.
I would definitely separate the head from the body.
It did look separated.
It was severed, but I mean, it was right next to the body. Well,
you don't think it's just going to magically come back to life?
No, but if some idiot frog lady decides to reconnect it, maybe, you know, I don't know.
Here's the thing, too. Didn't you think, which that was another way that took me out of it. Okay, so ma'am, you are so skilled that you can take this droid, bypass its whatever to get to its vocabulator so that you can translate, fix the ship, and make it fly.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe she could have done so instead of... Well, we'll get there in a minute. So she stresses the importance of her eggs getting to her husband, demands that he lives up to the deal. Djarin says that they'd be lucky to get off the planet alive. She lays a guilt trip on him.
She passive-aggressively pulls out the code.
I guess the stories about the Mandalorians living up to their word as part of their code are just stories for children. But he already broke part of the code when he saved the child, because part of the code would have been leaving the child to die. So he, you know, we already know that this guy, you know, he was saving a child, so I guess we're supposed to believe, okay, he's going to save her children too. But he starts to go work on the ship. But like you said, Annie, why isn't she doing something on the ship? He says it's not part of the deal. He says the damage.
Apparently, she needs to go take a bath in the hot tub.
Right. It looks severe. He starts working. Time passes. The child seems to point towards something, then disappears behind the ship. That leads him to the tracks of the frog lady. He follows through the tunnels, and then comes to her in a spa, like she's a hot spring, and she's bathing in the water with her brood. So, yeah, like, I get it. You're cold and stuff, but if you want to get off the planet, like Andy said, start working on the ship.
So, here's a question. Frogs are cold-blooded?
Right.
So, how did his thermal footprints, how did he track her?
That's a great point. Unless it's not...
I didn't necessarily think they were thermal, because they were footprints. So
I thought it was a signature.
I thought they were infrared, because there wasn't...
If it was infrared is heat.
But I was thinking it was like, but you're seeing, it's if it's just like your face scanner on your phone, it's sending out the lasers to read it.
And think it's just an indent?
So I thought it was a depth meter.
Gotcha.
Because it was only one color. If you'd had the multiple colors, you would see how long the heat, and you would see that there would have been change in the density for each footprint.
Season one, when they tracked Cara Dune around the hut, there was on like boards or a decking.
Okay.
And he tracked her that way. So that's why I put that together with that.
I think that's a reasonable question, because they haven't said like this is what kind of traffic tracking it is, but maybe it is just some, like you said, it could have just been a depth of field. But he's tracking a frog lady
in an ice cave.
Right.
It's really still not special.
Yeah, it was just weird. It was just a way for them to get us to believe that he was going, and you know, and again, the music is creepy. It's just weird. So the child is there with him. He takes the child with him to this creepy cave. The child starts trying to eat an egg again. He gets told off. The child finds another bottle. It finds another egg and cracks that open and eats what seems to be a spider, which grosses me out. Then we see more eggs appear to shake, then open, and the child runs into the snow. It was kind of cute how it ran through the snow. I mean, I know it's a puppet or
whatever. You can't go wrong, I think, with anything about the child. Yeah. Now, we might not like the episode.
Right.
Might not like...
But that was cute, right?
Right. What the child has done this episode has been the only saving grace for me on this episode.
But here's what makes me angry about the child.
Okay.
The child can save Mando from that one-horned mudhorn guy. But he doesn't do a thing about not one, not 50,000 spiders. He doesn't protect the ship.
He
doesn't put his hand up. He doesn't use the force. He healed a guy last season. He kept a robot from falling.
He did one of them.
He did one?
Because he ate it.
He ate it.
Started the whole
problem. He just couldn't. It was full.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that's where, to me, okay, so the child is this great, mysterious, he's going to save Mando. All he does now is he just looks at him like, I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. I just eat frogs.
Yeah. Like, man. I mean, for the, my feelings are I don't like spiders. So I already was like, I'm out on this.
Oh, I hate spiders. I was right there with you. When they were in Harry Potter, they were awful.
It was clearly supposed to be like an aliens kind of thing. Like, oh my gosh, we're in this room full. You see the... You see them before you know what they are, but I kind of knew. I'm like, oh, those are eggs. And sure enough, he cracks one open, and it's an egg. And it just happens to be a swarm of spiders.
And see, and I was disappointed that they were spiders. Because my thought is, they could be alien creatures, any type of alien creatures. Instead, they're like this hybrid spider crab with a vacuum cleaner on its face. And they could have been some sort of rock troll type creature, or something that was more creative, that would sprout arms, or they would start rolling, or became this avalanche Yeti, that was alive.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, there were so many different ways they could have gone with that. And then it's like, oh, they're just spiders.
Stupid spiders. And they were... The thing that kind of bothered me about those spiders in particular are they're so close to the spiders that we see in other Star Wars stuff. And I know... I get it. It was a Ralph McQuarrie drawing.
It's like
and it was supposed to be used in Empire Strikes Back. And they didn't use an Empire Strikes Back. But still, they put a creature like that in Star Wars Rebels that was immune to blaster bolts. So these ones aren't. So they're not the same spiders. But they look like those spiders from Rebels. So your first thought is, oh my gosh, it's those spiders again. Wait a minute. They're on a different planet.
It's the equivalent of crystal dogs in Last Jedi. They're just dogs. There's nothing special about them.
Yeah, they look cool, I guess, but I don't like spiders, so they didn't look very cool to me. So the other weird thing that happens is the frog lady grabs her clothes with her tongue.
That was cool. I like that part.
She shoots her tongue out and grabs her clothes, and then she's like dressed in an instant. So Mando picks up the child, slings the eggs on his back, and starts shooting. Giant spiders are attacking then. They're running through the cave. The frog lady is like starts running and then starts jumping like a frog, hopping like a frog. Jaren uses
and that is the moment when we realize there's nothing special about her, and you could have just taken any sort of stock 3D object that hops like a frog and inserted it for that lady, and there would have been nothing that would have said Star Wars about it. If you matted everything out in that whole shot, you'd have said, "Is this Star Wars? Is it not?" Anybody would be like, "Eh, it could be, could not be."
I gotta admit, I kind of wanted her to get eaten. I thought that would have raised the stakes a little bit. Like, if she got eaten and then he had to deliver... Like, the eggs are already laid.
No, but then he becomes Daddy Daycare. And he's just
Mando Daycare. So now he has...
He's a baby delivery service.
Now
he's just a baby delivery service.
Here's the thing. We've talked about Mando not being a responsible parent, right? Leaving his child. What about now the frog lady? She doesn't know how many children she's got left.
That's true. Yeah.
He keeps eating them. How many did he eat? Five?
He doesn't even know.
Right.
Yeah. I thought at some point maybe he was ingesting them to protect them.
I did. Or think
to
that...
make them grow faster. And then he was going to spit out little baby
frogs. There was that one scene where he put up his hands
to the jar.
To the jar. And they all came toward him. I thought, oh my gosh, they're going to be like...
He's going to help like yeah. life grow and he's then
grow them all. They'll be the
and it really was just him grabbing one and as an hors d'oeuvre.
Yep, I forgot about that scene. Yeah. So the other thing about those spiders is they can they're not special space Star Wars spiders. They shoot webbing too. It's not necessarily cold webbing. It's just a regular old. I mean, we didn't see any webbing in the cave at all, right? Until they come out. Like, there was no indications beforehand. We didn't see, like, one webbed off cave or anything like that. So suddenly, it's just these. I mean, the giant spiders were around. They just weren't in the cave with them. I don't know how you have laid that many eggs. And then expect, like, do they, were there any other creatures on this planet? Where, what were they eating? Or is this like, hey, finally lunch has arrived, and so then all of the eggs hatch? What are, you know, what are these things eating unless they really don't need to eat that often? I don't know. But these are the things that I think about. They make it back to the ship.
There's I'm pretty sure he just broke up in the cocoon, and they all realized it was time to open.
Time to feed, so some signal or something like that. They make it back to the ship. There's a huge hole. Still, they make for the cockpit. Jaren frees his blaster hand from webbing. He crushes the spider with his hand. He's shooting spiders as they come in. All seems hopeless. The frog lady has a small blaster and saves the child at one point from spider bites on his head. A flamethrower helps close the cockpit hatch. And they try to get the spiders out of the way. They close the door. Tim is editing my notes. And one of the giant spiders hops on top, pierces the cockpit, all appears lost, giant spider attacks, and then it gets hit by blaster fire. Blasts can be seen, heard outside the ship. Jaren makes his way down through the webbed hull, sees two bright lights. It's the X-Wings. They've landed. Pilots are firing rifles, and they do not fire on the Mandalorian. The firing stops. Carson says they ran the tabs on the Razor Crest. They say there's an arrest warrant for prisoner X6911. Onboard security records show he also apprehended three priority culprits from the wanted register. That was Mayfield, Berg, and Sheehan, I guess, from last season in episode 6. And they say it also showed the security records also showed that he put his own life in harm's way to protect that of Lieutenant Davin. I guess that was the guy's name who died.
He asked him his name. Remember when they were in the little that standoff? Yeah, he asked him what his name was. If he had family back home, he was trying to calm everybody down.
That's the same guy who activated the beacon in Chapter 6 too. And they ask, "Is that true?" Jaren asks, "Am I under arrest?" And said they say, "Technically, he should be, but these are trying times." He offers to forego his bounty if they help him fix the hull, and they say, "Well, how about this? We don't vaporize your antique of a ship if he gets his transponder working next time he's out and about." So they take off in their X-Wings and leave him. He heads back into the hull, says he's going to repair the cockpit so they can limp over to Trask. And the cockpit's the only thing he can pressurize. Nothing he can do for the hull. If you need to use the privy, do it now. No further spider threat. So I guess they killed all the spiders in the whole cave. They finish repairs, start the ship. It's shaky, but it flies. And he has the child on his lap as he takes off in space. He tells the frog lady to wake him up if someone shoots at him or if the door gets sucked off its rails. And he's kidding, of course, because if that happened, they'd all be dead. Ha ha ha! The child eats another egg and the Razor Crest flies off. End credits.
Thank the Lord.
And at that moment, we realized that this whole episode was a waste and they were exactly where they started.
I agree. I think this episode was, wasn't necessary. And in a way that some of the episodes in season one really were, they don't compare.
Episodes that didn't seem to fit or be needed, or like I think we even said they could be shuffled around.
Mm-hmm.
This one just seemed pointless.
Those were still cool.
They were cool, and they were good.
There was growth.
They gave us new characters. We learned more about Mando. What did we learn about Mando in this episode? Nothing. What did we learn about the child in this thing? Nothing. We reinforced things that we knew about them.
Now, we're also thinking, we've only seen two episodes. We don't know what's to come. Maybe there's something that they needed to set this up because the ship's going to be the way it is right now. I think they could have gone about a different way, of course. But for whatever reason, this episode was pointless.
Do you think that there is a scene that they could have shown at the end, a tag scene at the end, or if they could have left it? Like, let's say next week they get to Trask and something happens, or there's a big shock at the beginning of the episode. Do you think that they should have maybe taken something from the next episode that they were going to have and put it at the end of this one to make it mean something more? Or is there a tag that they could have
put on this? That's hard to say without knowing what the next episode is.
So, no, because I think this one, it just felt like as soon as that X-Wing pilot popped up and they shot that spider, it was like, oh, well, of course there's going to be a happy ending. Of course we have to resolve this all in here. Of course, there's no cliffhanger. This takes away the whole serial nature of The Mandalorian, which is what the Flash Gordon serials were based off of, which is what Star Wars was originally based off of, which is what made the episodic nature of Star Wars in the first place to be cool and creative and different. And so for them to end, to have this whole thing from the beginning to end in this one episode where it was just like, it started with nothing and it ended with nothing. There were no stakes. It just, ugh.
They had an opportunity, I think, with meeting the X-Wing pilots where they could have done something like, you know what, let us help you out with that transponder, where they could have made him truly invisible to the, you know, maybe they could have sensed the kinship
with him. He could have said to them, hey, this woman needs to get her children to her husband. Can you give her safe passage? And then we get her, the frog lady, and those babies out of the way, and it's just him and the child in front of them for themselves, and we'd be like, oh, finally we're rid of that crazy lady. Right. To me, this is how...
Well, he needs to get to Trask, and I'm guessing it's the water planet, so I'm guessing we're going to see more scenes from the trailers. Tim, you were going to say something?
No.
I just watched the trailer one time, so I don't want to... Because I don't want to spoil the whole season.
So I think at the point of when the X-Wings came, mm-hmm. really that turned into the turning point of the... Like, it might have been on a downward, slowly spiral at mm-hmm. the beginning, especially with the ant...
Dr. Mandible.
At that point, it was kind of going downhill, and I thought, okay, they could recover, and the X-Wings come, and like, oh, a little funny banter. We can make this recover. And then they crash on the planet, and that's when it just, the episode crashed just like the Razor Crest crashed.
Yeah. I mean,
it was just a big boss in a video game.
Yeah. This episode picked up right where we left off last episode. Do we want this one to pick up right where it left off?
Skip ahead in the future. Have us
already on the planet.
Well, no. Have him tell the frog lady bye as her husband is thanking her for saving the children.
Well, you do have to hear him say where the covert is. So you'll hear him say, and he'll say, I understand that one.
He can just be walking away with a child, and he can say, thanks for telling me where my Mando buddy is. We don't have to hear another frog person talk.
Well, here's what I'm thinking here, because we still haven't seen the water planet, volcanic planet, no Star Destroyers, no Stormtroopers, Moff Gideon, Darksaber, TIE Fighters, Cara Dune, or Greef Karga, and no mention of Ming-Na Wen's bounty hunter, Fennec Shand, yet, or more from Boba Fett.
You still have eight episodes.
We still have, we have six, right?
Six episodes
left. Yeah. Now, in the first season,
one with this frog lady nonsense, right? And spiders.
So what I'm thinking, so logically, I'm thinking, okay, well, the next episode we go to the water planet, but that might not be the case. What might be the case is we might end up having the ship limp into a different planet. And then we have, so then we're stuck with Frog Lady for more episodes.
No.
I don't think any of us want that, but that could be the case. I mean, that we kind of thought, after, what was it, Sanctuary. We thought after Sanctuary, all right, they'll get back on track. No, then we had the other episode, the Gunslinger, and we went back to Tatooine. Oh, we'll get back on track. No, we had the Prisoner episode. And then it was like, there was all these things mashed in the middle before we had his real mission underway. We didn't see a lot of scenes in the trailer about other Mandalorians. Maybe he spends this whole season
just trying
to get this one. We think, oh, maybe he's going to go to this covert and it doesn't pay off. Maybe he spends the whole season trying to just find one Mandalorian, because Pelimato at one point she said, oh, what, you finally found a Mandalorian and you killed him and took his armor. Maybe he doesn't find any other Mandalorians this whole season, and it's just one after the other. Something happens while he's on his way to this water planet. Maybe that's the last episode. Maybe he gets caught up by a Star Destroyer on his way, and that's where we see those scenes from the Star Destroyer. Maybe Moff Gideon gets wind of him.
There's a lot of maybes there.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of maybes, but I don't I personally want them to get... One of the things I liked about like Breaking Bad and some of these other TV shows that are that have been renowned for being so good is they never like made you wait. You thought maybe this one little plot thread was going to go the whole season, and they got to it right the next episode. I want to see more of that. They have a whole universe that they can make stuff up as they go. I don't want one story thread the whole season. It's only 8 episodes. I don't want one story thread to last the whole 8 episodes. I don't want to see him every week finally trying to go and find some more male employees. Get to that already. Let's move on to the next thing.
That's what Star Trek does. Star Trek has in every episode, there's always, we've got this star log. Let's log star log number 546. We found life on this other planet. All right, now let's chart the next planet. It's like, oh, this planet's made up of robots. This planet's made up of blue people. And they're just scientists discovering stuff all the time.
But they also have the availability of 26 episodes.
Right.
We don't.
But that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's just, to me, I don't want to just watch somebody go around and flip pages in a book and show me a whole bunch of different places. I want a story with complex characters, with all sorts of relationships. Yep. I mean, Cara Dune's still sitting out there. We don't know what's happening with her. We don't know what's happening with Moff Gideon. We don't know what's happening with the Reese dude with Parker. The dark saber. So there's so many different things. We don't know what that late other bounty hunter was. We don't know what the guy was that you said might have been Boba Fett from the last episode. We don't know about the guy that shot that she shot in the back in the episode with the Moss planet with the AT-AT or AT-ST. Yeah. We don't know what happened with the guy that was with Ming Chen. So there's Ming Yao.
One thing that I totally forgot and it just popped into my head is the people who were setting the trap, they said, get the child.
Yeah.
So they clearly
I don't think they were scavengers. I think they were bounty hunters.
Oh, right. So they're clearly after him. So, but there was no other word of that the whole rest of the episode.
Yeah.
Are we going to see fallout from that?
I think we'll also see little bits of that. You know, he's being hunted.
Right.
He's being told we are, you know, being hunted, or being the hunter is being hunted too.
Right. Well, they said at the beginning, I mean, how many of these discs were out there for the bounty for the child?
Right.
So, I mean, yeah. There were several of them in the back.
And after what he did, there's discs
for him. And IG-11. Oh, yeah. So now, of course, it makes total sense that there would be bounty on him.
Well, they were laying in wait for him to come back. So they expected him to return. They expected him to be in that place at that time on his way back. So... they, you know, there's got to be somebody's going to find out.
I told him
maybe at somebody somewhere is going to find Pelimato, and I mean she's a big mouth. So, oh, I sent him to trap. You know, so it's only a matter of time, and maybe that's part of the reason why he didn't want to travel sublight is because he knows that when he does that, it's just so much easier for somebody to catch up to him. But there's just a lot of places they could go where I would be much more excited. And then to have an episode like this, like I said, not a big horror genre fan, not a fan of spiders that much. So what we got this week wasn't great. Now, maybe I feel differently. Maybe I don't feel as down on this episode after a couple more episodes. Maybe I'll look back on this one and say, oh, it was okay. I mean, that's what I hope, that maybe I look back on this one and think it was all right. But I think... the three of us, if we were giving thumbs up, thumbs down, it would be 3 thumbs down, right?
Absolutely.
For sure?
Yep.
And I only have 2.
If you disagree with us, please let us know. Send us feedback to thisisthewaypodcast@gmail.com, Twitter @thisisthewaypod, Instagram as well. And hopefully we'll have some product. Maybe I can make a point to do that this weekend and get some images out there on Instagram of the great stuff on cufflinks.com. Theway15 is the code for that. And you can, I did it again, this twitch.tv/thisisthewaypod. You can look at the video on demand section and find the watch along. I still haven't figured out how to get the camera and the background working at the same time. I'm using a laptop for it, setting it up in my living room. Maybe I just need to forget that and do it in the office and have the camera right there. But I don't really think you really need to see my face anyways. If you're watching the show as a watch along, you got the show on and you just want to hear, someone else comment on it, saying the same things you are, then that's what you're looking for in the watch along anyways. So, next week we've got season 2, episode 3, chapter 11 airing November 13th. It's also supposed to be written by Jon Favreau. I don't have a tagline for that yet, and maybe it's best that we don't know what's coming. Maybe next week we'll be surprised and excited about what's to come. If it's the water planet, we could end up meeting that cloaked figure from the trailers, Sasha Banks' character, and maybe we'll find out some cool stuff. Maybe it actually is a Mandalorian, and maybe the covert that he's seeking is really important Mandalorians, but maybe not. Maybe we get another episode like this week, so we'll have to wait and see. Any final thoughts, Andy?
I hope next week is better.
Tim?
I agree. I think next week will be better because you really can't go much further down.
And that's pretty much my feelings as well. That'll do it for us this week. And this week I get to change things up a little bit. I get to say, this is the way, and then may the force be with you, and also with you.